You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 93. The last show was about short-term rentals in New Orleans and the impact on the city. I was joined by Kevin Litton, a reporter at NOLA.com who covers local politics. It was an interesting discussion that'll make you think about affordable housing and a whole lot of the impacts on the city. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. Today's episode is about the carriage industry and about the role of mules in New Orleans and the role that they've played in New Orleans history in general. Before we dive into that discussion, though, I want to tell you about a couple sponsors. First up is Two Chicks Walking Tours. Lately, I've been talking about the Two Chicks Ladies of the Night Tour, but today I want to circle back to their Garden District Tour. If you love New Orleans, you've probably wandered through the Garden District. It's beautiful, but it really comes to life when you have a guide who can tell you about the history and the people who live there. On a Two Chicks Walking Tour, you learn about the architecture, the residents, and more. You'll get to see where Anne Rice lived, where Saints favorite Archie Manning still lives, and you might even run into actor John Goodman walking his dog. You also get to tour Lafayette Cemetery, just across the street from Commander's Palace. Lafayette is one of my favorites because it's small, it's old, and it has lots of character and a lot of characters in it. Two Chicks keeps their tour group small and offers a more intimate experience. You have time to ask questions and really walk away getting an insider's perspective of the Garden District. Two Chicks also offers tours of St. Louis Cemetery No. 1 and the Ladies of the Night Tour I mentioned. Whatever you choose, know you'll be in great hands and have a wonderful time. Use code BEYOND and save 15% at twochickswalkingtours.com. Lots of you reach out to me about moving to New Orleans. And if you've gotten the bug, you need a good realtor. And that's where my friend Liz Wood comes in. Let Liz and her team over at Liz Wood Realty help you find the right place, whether you plan to rent or purchase the home of your dreams. New Orleans is a terrific city, but choosing the neighborhood that's the best fit for you can be overwhelming. Liz makes the process fun and easy. Uptown, downtown, by the lake or near the river, mid-city, the 9th Ward, Liz can help you sort it all out. Reach out to her at lizwoodrealty.com and make your dream of living in New Orleans a reality. Several members of our Facebook community have already done just that, and they're thrilled with their new homes. You will be too. All right, with that out of the way, let's jump into our discussion. As I mentioned earlier, today's episode is about carriages and mules in New Orleans. The person that we're going to talk to today reached out to me about a year ago, and the more I thought about it, the more I thought, this is something I don't know a whole lot about, and I think people see the carriages in the French Quarter, but maybe never really stop to think about it or think about the role that mules have played, not only with carriages, but more in New Orleans. My guest today is a carriage operator, and she also bills herself as a historic interpreter, which we'll talk about. Welcome to the show, Miss Charlotte Jones. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Mark.
Good. Well, thank you again. About a year ago, you reached out to me and said, hey, this I think would be an interesting topic for your audience. So I'm excited to get into it because it's something I don't know a lot about. But first, let's talk a little bit about your background. So you did not grow up in New Orleans, but you've been here a while. Where'd you grow up?
I am that big T word, a transplant.
That's okay.
I've been here, well, I grew up in Florida. Mm-hmm. I've been here since 2007.
And you came here to go to the University of New Orleans, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you just got the bug and decided to stay?
Yeah, and a big part of my decision to go to UNO was because it was in New Orleans. So it's a great school.
And I understand you sort of first fell in love with New Orleans on a family trip years ago.
Yes, and my mom still fusses at my dad about it because he insisted we go through New Orleans for the day on our way out to Texas. And sure enough, we did all the touristy things. Walked through Jackson Square. I probably saw some of my future coworkers that day and didn't realize it. We rode the streetcar all the way to Canal and Carrollton and back. And it was a great day.
Yeah. New Orleans has a way of sucking you in once you come and you experience it a little bit. So you decided to stay. And how did you end up in the carriage industry?
Well, I do what all millennials in New Orleans do. I started a nonprofit, co-founded, worked for a few various nonprofits, actually Louisiana State Parks. Eventually, I just kind of stepped away from that and got my tour guide license because I've always been a big kind of history nerd. It's the best way to put it. It works. It fits me. And so I knew that was kind of a good option. And sure enough, Royal Carriages was hiring, so I applied and I was hired.
Did you have any experience with mules or large animals?
I rode a little bit as a teenager, Pasifino horses back in Florida.
So let's first, maybe before we really jump in, I'm sure there's someone out there wondering what exactly a mule is. So let's clear that up.
Yes. So a mule is the hybrid between a horse and a donkey. It is always sired between those two animals. The Jack is the donkey and the Molly is the horse. If you change the genders of the parents, that actually makes a henny. Hennies are different from mules, and they're typically not bred.
Sure.
So,
and why is it that mules, when you take a carriage ride in the French Quarter, it's always a carriage drawn by a mule?
Mm-hmm.
So why is it that it is a mule and not a horse?
Well, the city of New Orleans made it law in the 80s that they had to use mules for pulling carriages in the French Quarter. Apparently, it was a rough summer. A couple of horses fell out, and the city decided to go ahead and switch to mules, which kind of makes sense. Mules were the dominant draft animals of the South before the internal combustion engine and tractors and cars put them all out of work.
Well, and maybe, so we'll jump back there then before we start talking about carriages and their modern day use in New Orleans. But what role did mules play, both sort of in the history of the South, but also in New Orleans in particular?
In the South, they were everywhere. They were by far the dominant draft animal. There's still some oxen around in the 1800s, I think up until the late 1800s, but for the most part, it was mules. Considered hardier than horses, stronger, better on their feet,
okay.
And also they ate less, so less cost.
A little bit more resistant to the heat as well,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. The heat tolerance is a big thing here, well, in the South. What's kind of interesting with a mule, you know, in the old cowboy movies, you always see a guy, the hero, taking off to wherever and pretty much kills the horse. The horse will keep running. Mule is not going to keep running. If he's overheated, overworked, he's going to stop. And so it's pretty hard to overheat a mule. Not that we try, but.
Right. Yeah. And we'll certainly talk about sort of the ins and outs of caring for the animals in a bit. So were they used in the early days of the streetcar? People think about streetcars today on electric tracks, but for many, many years they were pulled by animals.
They were.
Were those typically horses or mules?
Typically mules. You definitely see pictures of horses as well pulling streetcars. But as far as I understand, it was mostly mules. They pulled wagons, did all the drayage work, pulling cotton samples, sugar, goods from the boats into the port, brought them into the city. Train cars as well, and parade floats, Mardi Gras parades.
Right, there are some early pictures of both Rex and Comus, or many of them, with pictures being pulled. People often say horses, but they're typically not. They're typically mules.
Typically mules, and a lot of times the parade nobility also rode mules early on.
Is that right? Instead of horses.
Yeah.
And today, of course, in Mardi Gras parades, you see almost exclusively the carnival captains and dukes and such riding on horses. So I can imagine in the 1800s then, thinking about the port and how big it was, particularly in the first half of the 1800s, there must have just been mules everywhere.
There were mules everywhere, especially around the French Market. We still see those photos today, the early 1900s. Mules and vegetable carts just lined up along the back of the market. It's incredible.
Right.
So, and it sounds like, I have to look more into it, but it sounds like the wagons that loaded cotton samples from plantations and farms outside of the city were basically almost like large flatbed trucks today. Very few, like no sides, no walls.
Sure.
And they became known as floats, cotton floats. And there were also, floats was the general name for that type of wagon. And sure enough, those are the same types of wagons that become parade floats early on.
Sure. Interesting. Right. And some of the old line carnival crews still have as their base a type of wagon that was used. I think some of them were used. Dr. Stephen Hales, when we did an episode about Rex, talked about they were, I think, like sanitation trucks effectively, but they were, you know, large flatbed wagons that they could build as a use as a base and, mm-hmm. and build the carnival float. And so again, some of those old crews, you still kind of see that, and you see the way they shake when they come down the street, and that has to do with that underpinning there.
And the company I work for, we still do a couple of Mardi Gras parades with mules.
Oh, you do?
Crew de Vue is our big one.
Ah, yes. Yeah. Crew de Vue. I think we didn't do an episode about it, but we've certainly talked about it. A not-for-kids parade.
Right.
But a really fun parade in the French Quarter. Very, very heavy on the adult satire.
Yeah.
But a lot of fun, a lot of fun. So let's talk a little bit about the carriage industry. How long have carriages been taking people through the French Quarter?
Carriages have been used to conduct tours since at least the 1940s, 1941. And carriages have been rolling in the French Quarter since 1730.
Right, right. So obviously, maybe not obviously, right? Long before carriages were here early, from the founding or the modern founding of New Orleans. Would they have used horses back then, or would they have used mules, or some of both?
Both. If you're in a nice carriage or coach, it was always a horse. Mm. It's a social status thing.
Sure.
Wagons, and pretty much if it was more like your middle-class family, probably a mule.
Mm-hmm. But then when you jump all the way forward to the 1940s, I think probably the oldest carriage company in existence is Royal Carriages, right? And so they've been around 75 or 80 years now,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, 1941, they bought a Praline wagon from Aunt Sally. Well, Aunt Sally's the company.
Sure.
Aunt Sally's Pralines. And sure enough, they started conducting tours.
It's interesting because at that point, the French Quarter was even more residential than it is today. And it really wasn't. We've done a couple episodes with Richard Campanella, but one of them was about the history of Bourbon Street. And it really didn't become the Bourbon Street that we think of today until much later.
Right.
And it started maybe in the 50s, but really until the 60s and 70s that it started to get kind of the neon, you know, sort of destination that it is today.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever way you think about that, right? But I can imagine in the 40s, it was still, well, you had the Desire streetcar line.
Yeah.
You certainly had automobiles. You had big automobiles. But the French Quarter, in some respects, would have looked different. In other respects, of course, and we'll get into it, you have a very large residential part of the, in fact, most of the French Quarter is still residential. Mm-hmm. That would have been an interesting thing to see.
I've seen old postcards and photos of mm-hmm. carriages actually and cars, regular cars, parked along Jackson Square, what's now St. Anne and Charters and St. Peter. Sure enough, there are carriages and cars just parking to go to Mass.
Well, and that's a great point. What you now think of as the moonwalk up on the river, so between Jackson Square and the river, you have Decatur. Until very, very recently, you couldn't see the river or couldn't easily get to the river because you had docks and warehouses, mm-hmm. and it was not really thought of as a destination.
Right.
In fact, we should probably do an episode about this. There was a real movement to put a highway there. It ultimately went on Claiborne Avenue, and of course, that's another story, but it sort of destroyed the African-American community mm-hmm. there. It was a beautiful boulevard, but nonetheless, they were going to put the highway right there on the river, and one of the things that's hard to contemplate through today's lens is it wasn't like people were walking up to the river to enjoy it and see.
They weren't getting their beignets and...
That's right, and strolling along the moonwalk, right? It was a very different... you really weren't going up there unless you were working in the industry, and you couldn't easily get to the river. You couldn't see it that way. So that's an interesting thing to think about. So I want to talk a little bit about the. I want to talk a lot about the carriage industry. So you come to the carriage, you decide to do this, you get a job doing it. You don't really have experience other than you have ridden horses in the past. What is it like to come into an industry like that? What kind of training do you get? Is it difficult?
It's not difficult. It's a completely new experience. And that's something that people still ask me a lot. Do you ride equines? And sitting on horseback versus driving a vehicle with an equine, it's like riding a bicycle versus driving a scooter. And I still haven't figured out which is the scooter and which is the bike, but they are completely different, even though they are similar.
Sure. So, you know, what tourists and locals alike see are the carriages and drivers and mules parked typically right in front of Jackson mm-hmm. Square. There are a couple other spots in the quarter, but for the most part, Jackson Square is where, if you wanted to go take a tour, is where you would go. But before we talk about that, let's talk about behind the scenes. So where do the mules live?
Well, each company has their own stable, where they their own space where they keep their carriages as well. So Royal Carriages has a space in the Marigny Triangle. It's actually an old undertaker's stable.
Makes sense.
Yeah, which undertakers were actually your kind of your big stable holders around here. So they're in the Marigny Triangle. I work for Mid-City Carriages, which our stables are in barn are actually in the Treme. Mm-hmm. And so I work for the Charbonnet family, who are still undertakers.
Yes.
And they keep their horses for funerals and events like that there as well.
Well, and just recently, so we're recording this in late June 2019, and Mac Rabinac, Dr. John's funeral, just happened in the last week, and Charbonnet took care of that, right? And I think
right.
the carriage is probably from mm-hmm. from your company. And so in a traditional New Orleans funeral, the carriage, there is still a carriage pulling the casket.
Right.
It's usually a glass, and I think it was in that case. So you can sometimes see the coffin.
If there's glass paneling, mm-hmm. you could see the casket. And my barn manager, one of my barn managers, drove the horses. So,
really?
Yeah, it was very, I was pretty proud of our company.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a, that scene is a very typical classic New Orleans mm-hmm. Burial procession, complete with the second line and all that goes with it. I think one of the things that's interesting that people don't think about is we're talking about barns. You don't think of the space for that in the French Quarter or the Marigny or the Treme, right? These are the oldest neighborhoods in New Orleans, and they're very dense.
They are very dense, and they are still large, and they're kind of tucked away. It's pretty interesting how, even historically, but especially today, how these barns have and stables have adapted or have to adapt to stick around.
Sure. How many mules are working in the French Quarter?
I would estimate approximately 60 at any point, because we have a day shift and a night shift.
Sure.
And then there's also a whole roulette of animals that are on vacation at any given point. So
let's talk about that a little bit. What is sort of, I am sure there are animal activists and people that are concerned about the animals. Let's talk a little bit about sort of what is the life of a mule who works in the carriage industry here in New Orleans. So they live in the barns, the barns and stables nearby, as we've talked about. It makes sense, walking distance mm-hmm. From their work. But what is sort of a, I know that your mule is Chica.
Yeah.
What is Chica's life like or a typical day for her?
Well, so funny about Chica, she was adopted with a Cinderella pumpkin carriage. So she kind of came to Mid-City Carriages as a package deal.
Okay.
But for life of a Mid-City Carriage mule, we have a farm outside of Gonzales, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. So if a mule or horse needs treatment, if they need a vacation, that's generally where they go. Most of the animals that, or most of the mules that come into the industry start work at around typically 10 years old, sometimes a little bit younger, not much, maybe 12. And then they retire between 20 and 25. Now, mules on average live to be at least 35 years, sometimes 40. And of course, I've heard old timers say, I knew a mule lived to 65. So it cracks me up. And that attests to their longevity. So a day in the life of Chica, where she's working, is I get to the barn typically around 2:30 or 3 p.m. I let her finish her food. She's much like me. She gets kind of hangry if she doesn't get to finish everything, which is fair. And then I get her ready. Typically, I bathe her, put the gear on her, which is, of course, essential. And then we go to work. Now, she can be on the road up to 6 hours a day. That's the city's limit in the summertime, 7 hours a day throughout the rest of the year. Now, we are night shift, working in the French Quarter near Bourbon Street. It's very rare we ever put in a six-hour shift. We typically mm-hmm. work shorter than that. So it's really not a hard work day for her. And we come back, and she gets to roll around in her shavings, hay, and call it a day.
And then periodically, they get a little bit of a vacation, mm-hmm. right? They get to go back to the farm and get out of the work environment of the French Quarter.
Right. And then under believe it's the municipal code, but either way, city law, every working French Quarter meal is supposed to have a 3-month vacation.
And so a typical tour, how long does that take?
Average tour is 30 minutes. A lot of people also choose to do an hour tour as well. Mm-hmm. Hour is pretty interesting because you have a few different options at your disposal. You can do every 30-minute tour involves the French Quarter, typically. But an hour, you also get to go to the cemetery and do a walking tour of the St. Louis No. 1 Cemetery for about 30 minutes. Or you can go to our Creole suburbs, such as the Marigny neighborhood or the Treme. And then if you really want to go to town, you can book a longer tour for the Garden District. That's more in the fall and the spring that we do that. A little too warm nowadays.
Sure. And how difficult is it to train the mules to be able to handle the environment of the French Quarter?
It varies. It varies by the mule. Same thing with the driver. Some drivers get a hang of it right away. Others, it might take a while. And Chica is still considered a little bit green, a little bit new. She's only been on the job for just over a year now. And she's still figuring it out. Every now and then we come across something that she's never seen before, and then I have to talk her through it. And so,
yeah, I mean, I think you think about being on foot, a tourist, walking through the French Quarter, there's an awful lot of distractions and pitfalls, right? There are people stepping off curbs and there's loud noises, there's big trucks, you know, there's all kinds of stuff going on that's distracting for a person.
Right.
How heavy are those carriages?
They vary. You have your Visas, which are your smaller kind of personal carriages, and then your stretches can weigh about 2,000 pounds. But there's a whole system in place with the size of the wheels, with the strength of the mule, the size of the mule, that factors into how much weight they're actually pulling. It doesn't feel like 2,000 pounds.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I imagine, though, as an operator, there's a lot going on there, right? So, you know, you have this large vehicle, you have, I would assume, 4 to 8 passengers sometimes. You have the mule, you have all the stuff going on. How difficult is it to navigate all of that and still offer a tour and sort of history of the city?
Some days are more distracting than others. And I think people's routes play a lot into it. Especially on the night shift, you see a lot of us going back towards like Barracks, mm-hmm. Governor Nichols, a little bit of St. Philip, you know, those that kind of section of the lower French Quarter.
Sure, the more residential
part. It's much more quiet back there than... Am I going to take a Chica down Bourbon Street on a Saturday night? Probably not. Maybe the tail end of it, the residential part.
Right. I would think that it's a really great way for people to see. Again, we've mm-hmm. talked on the podcast many times that I think visitors don't realize how residential the French Quarter is. Mm-hmm. And certainly when you get downriver of Jackson Square or you head back towards Rampart Street, you know, the part between the Jackson Square and Canal Street is very built up, very commercial. You have hotels, you have some of the not-so-savory parts of Bourbon Street. But as you get towards Rampart and then over towards Esplanade, downriver, mm-hmm. it really is mostly residential.
Right.
And it's quiet.
Yes, and it's lovely.
It is lovely. So if someone were to take a carriage tour, what do they get? What do they get in the discussion and what do they get to see?
Well, it all varies by the driver. I think that is a big component of it.
What do you try to impart or what do you try to share with a visitor who joins you in Chica for a ride?
So my tour, I try to give kind of a broad history of the city within its first 100 years or so, 150 years, but I try to make it in a way that's entertaining. So I have an amazing Rolodex of dad jokes I can pull out at any point. And we're not scripted. We don't have set routes. So with me, I talk a little bit about the founding of the city. And then by the time we get back to Jackson Square, I am talking about essentially the renovation of Jackson Square in the 1840s, early 1850s, and the Baroness Pontalba. And I purposely structure my tour in a way that they can see something in the present day that reflects the story I'm telling.
Can you give us an example of that? And I'm putting you on the spot a little bit.
I'm just trying to think.
While you're thinking for a moment, you mentioned the Pontalba. And so if you come to visit the Jackson Square and you look at the apartments lining both sides of the square, those are the Pontalba apartments, the upper and the lower apartments. Interestingly, and we might have covered this on a podcast once before, that ironwork was really the sort of original ironwork in the city, as I understand it. And so you wouldn't have seen the ironwork that you see all throughout the French Quarter and the Garden District today without that. That really sort of became the model and started the trend here in this city.
Right. Thinking about your question, when I start the tour, I talk a little bit about the Plaza de Armas, of course, now Jackson Square, Place des Armes. And by the time I turn up Dumaine Street, we go by Madame John's Legacy, which is a great example of our French colonial days. I forget the name of the house, but on the next block, there's a Spanish cottage. So by then, I'm telling my customers that what life was like under Spanish rule. And if we do turn right onto Bourbon Street and we go to Lafitte's blacksmith shop, by the time I get to the blacksmith shop, I've already kind of discussed the great fires that destroyed the city. At least these are all Cliff Note versions of
sure.
this. But what's kind of fun is by the time I'm in the middle of that block, I get to say, well, the fire actually stopped right about here. It turned back on itself. And this building survived the fire, or was spared from the fire, I should say.
Sure.
And then we're in front of Lafitte's 1770s estimated, or circa, Creole cottage. And so that's how I try to structure my tours. That's the teacher in me working with kids for so long.
Well, and that's a really interesting way, right? In a very small, just a several block area, you can really get an interesting history. And again, maybe we should do an episode about fires someday, but there were two fires about 10 years apart. And one of the things that's interesting about Madame John's legacy is it's one of the oldest buildings it's one of the buildings that dates from that era. It was rebuilt very quickly after the first fire. And so that makes it one of the older buildings down there. And certainly of that style. I think that's something people don't realize. You come to the French Quarter, but most of what you see is Spanish design.
Right.
But it's called the French Quarter. It was under French rule longer. But the architecture has many more Spanish characteristics for the most part. Yeah, but Lafitte's Blacksmith is a wonderful, not only a good bar, but a wonderful building to see.
Yeah.
When people come to join, are they typically locals? Are they tourists?
Most of the time, it's going to be tourists. We do get a few locals who say, sure, why not?
Yeah.
And it's pretty fun. And sometimes the locals come in looking to basically have a challenge about my historical knowledge or, you know, if I'm from here or not.
Sure.
And so that can be pretty fun, too. I try to keep them engaged.
You know, one of the things in my 4 years or so experience with the podcast is that a lot of tour guides are not necessarily from New Orleans, but they know the history far better than New Orleanians do. Because it tends to be that you do research, and if you are drawn to that line of work like you are, then you are drawn to the interest. I should mention, you and I are having this conversation at Tulane, and part of the reason for that is you were doing research. And that has been my experience. I mentioned Two Chicks Walking Tours earlier. Christine Miller always has her head buried in history and trying to learn more about it. And I think that even if you are a local, if you're listening to this, I'm always amazed, and not amazed in the sense of what the tour guide knows, but amazed in how my perception and what the stories I've been told don't necessarily line up with reality. And you don't have to be a local to have dived into that and figured it out. How much do you think how much of it is entertainment versus education? And is there sort of a dance, if you will, of that?
There is definitely a tango. I would say for me personally, it's about 50%. We'll go with 70 historical knowledge, 30 entertainment.
Sure, because I think the hook is, right, to keep people interested and they learn along the way while they're having a good time.
Exactly, and this is an introduction to the city. Most of the time, most of our customers, they just get into town, they don't know what to do, where to go, so they hop on a carriage, and then we kind of give them a lay of the land. So we're ambassadors in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and I would imagine it's a really good way. It's been a while. In fact, the last time I was in the carriage, my wife and I took our bridal party in a carriage from the Prince Kantai Hotel to Jackson Square and stopped at a bunch of spots to take our pre-wedding photos. And that's a really fun way. But I would imagine it's just a different viewpoint for the tourist or local alike to see the city.
I think so. And then there's also just, it's kind of funny how sitting in the carriage, you have a height advantage, you know, that you don't get in a car.
Sure.
Because you're covered. And that you don't get walking around. So it's kind of fun in that regard, too, where we might be driving by and a doorway that's never open is open for once. And you get to kind of peek inside, you know. Not that I encourage that, but it's fun.
Well, I think you see a different view of the architecture, mm-hmm. right? Just like
better
you
better view of the galleries,
right? Exactly. And do you get a pretty good mix? I would think that taking a carriage ride would be a really fun opportunity for a family.
Yes,
right. Sort of all ages, really.
All ages, all backgrounds. I've met people from all over the world in just 3 years. It's pretty phenomenal.
Sure. And you and I were talking before, we're going to get our kids out to go on a carriage ride with you and Chica, and they are super excited about it. I don't know how much they're interested in the history versus the mule versus the experience, but I think that's a fun thing to do as a family if you're coming to visit New Orleans or maybe a staycation and you just want to go try something different. It's an interesting way to sort of see the city.
It is. And a way I kind of gauge whether or not my tour is going well is if I can keep the teenagers interested, then I'm doing good.
What is the, you know, historically, so again, we mentioned royal carriages. They've been around mm-hmm. for a long time. My sort of, when I think about being in the French Quarter as a kid, it was sort of an old, if you will, an old profession in the sense that it would tend to be older people, generally older men, mm-hmm. who would lead the carriages. And it was maybe a little bit more, this is maybe not entirely fair, but it was a little bit of Carnival Barker meets historian a little bit. It was a little bit more on the showman side.
Yeah, and there's definitely still some of that. And I think it's fun.
Yeah.
And part of it, what I admire about, they might hurt me for this, no, so I call them the old timers, is that the old timers, they know how to load a carriage. You go down there, you see David Carrier, the purple man, you're going to know right away that he's the purple man. And he's great. He's so much fun to talk to. And so I think people come to town, they're not necessarily looking for the history tour. Mm-hmm. They're not looking for a borderline college lecture.
Sure.
They're looking for, like, the purple man. Like, they're just going to go have fun for half an hour. They're going to laugh, you know, get to see the town. It's great. And I think that's kind of an important segue to folks you really don't see in New Orleans anymore, that kind of working class, like almost like dock workers, mm-hmm. longshoremen back in the day. That you don't really see that around anymore. And then it's almost like you're Carnival barkers at the carriage line or on Bourbon Street, hawkers trying to get you inside the clubs, you know.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It's interesting.
I think New Orleans is a city grappling with, the last episode we did was about affordable housing and the impact of the short-term rental market. And I think in the same way you talk about laborers and draftsmen working in the quarter and other places, as the city has grown up, and depending more and more on tourism, it gets harder and harder for the infrastructure for all those people that work to produce all those things, whether it's manning the clubs or the carriages or the hospitality industry in general. And it's one of those things that I think we don't often stop and think about. I also think it's interesting with the carriages and the mules in general is, again, you think back to the 1800s and what it would have looked like and the noise and the motion, right?
The smell.
Right. And it wouldn't have been at all about tourism, but it would have been probably even more crowded than it is today.
Yes.
And again, Richard Campanella has been on the show. I think a thing that sort of surprised me is the dock today is largely hidden from sight.
Right.
So there is dock work all up and down the river, but you just don't see it because it's behind sort of fences and the levees. But the dock where mules would have been working and ships would have been loading and unloading really extends quite far from the French Quarter.
Right.
And so it really would have been up and down today when you think about the Irish Channel or along Chapultepec. If you've been to New Orleans, there's a dock all back there. You just don't see it and maybe think about it. But if you think back in time, that's what it would have been like. You know, you'd have had all of this motion and industry going up and down, but it would have been powered by animals,
mm-hmm.
right? What do you think in terms of most of the tours are in the French Quarter? How often do you get the opportunity to take a group outside of the French Quarter? And how does that differ?
It varies. I don't push the hour tours as much anymore just because I am on the night shift. And if we're going to the Marigny, you got to be careful about how crowded Frenchman Street might be. Not sure. That I worry about the my meal spooking or anything. It's just more I have to worry about, like, is the loud brass band going to be playing?
Sure.
Not so worried about the crowds. Now, it is a completely different kind of vibe going into the Treme. I love to do the Treme tour. I don't get to do it as much as I used to. But there it is, strictly residential.
Yeah.
And every now and then I'll be doing a Treme tour and I'm cruising down North Robertson and my bosses are sitting in their backyard and I get to, you know, tell my people, tell them you love the tour. And so it's pretty great in that regard. And it is a great change of pace.
Yeah, the Treme is an amazing neighborhood on so many levels, right? The culture, it's considered the oldest African-American neighborhood in the country, I believe. You have St. Augustine, you have the church there, you have the Backstreet Cultural Museum, which is fabulous. If you have interest in learning about Mardi Gras Indian history and the second lines and all that, it's a fabulous, in fact, I think that was an old mortuary or funeral parlor as well. But it's a very different, it's an easy walk or a ride, obviously, out of the French Quarter, but it's an amazing part of New Orleans mm-hmm. history.
And it's great to point out the little mom and pop spots like the Backstreet Cultural Museum, because guests of the city would never know it's there
right.
unless they were absolutely looking for it. So I've had a few folks go, we're going to that museum, or hey, can you go ahead and drop us off back here? So,
yeah, I think that, to me, that's almost on the essential list of things to do in New Orleans, and it's something that people wouldn't realize or even think to do. Mm-hmm. And again, it's on the same block as the church, which is the oldest African-American Catholic parish in the United States. And they have, it's really interesting, I don't want to spoil all of it, but it's really sobering. You're very close to Congo Square, mm-hmm. and you can see there's a tribute or a memorial to slaves there. And it's really interesting, and it's just blocks away from the French Quarter.
Right.
So that's interesting that you could take a carriage ride and get into that. And also, you mentioned, it's amazing how quiet it gets just a couple blocks from mm-hmm. Bourbon Street, whether you head into the Treme or into the downriver part of the French Quarter.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that is definitely worth experiencing for tourists, but also for locals. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you go to, most locals, it feels like go to the French Quarter for a meal or for an event or something. But wandering that part of the French Quarter in the afternoon, just like we are today, is really a nice time to sort of soak up the history and see a different take on it.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our sponsor. I want to tell you about the old number 77 Hotel. It's a place I've recommended frequently. It's in a great location in the Warehouse District, just 3 blocks from the French Quarter. It's close to lots of great places to eat and drink, and it's near the streetcar lines, too. I love that they have a wide range of choices when it comes to rooms. Really something for everybody. They have these interior rooms for when you don't want any hint of daylight after a long night out. They also offer premium rooms and artist loft suites that are curated by local New Orleans artists. There's a ton of choices for a small hotel. Oh, and the hotel's pet-friendly, too. As if all that wasn't enough, they have an award-winning restaurant, Compare Le Pen. And besides great food, they have terrific cocktails. In fact, the bar is one of my favorite places to meet out-of-town listeners. The old number 77 hotel is located at 535 Chapultepec Street. Use code BBOLD77 when you book a room and save 25%. Plus, you get a little bit of lagniappe. A little something extra, in the form of a $10 credit at Tootlaw for coffee and stuff in the morning. All right, let's get back to our discussion. So what's in store for you going forward with it? How do you try to develop and keep yourself engaged and learn more about the city for your carriage rides?
Well, I've been doing my own research on the side, particularly about kind of the history of mules in the city, and it's been phenomenal. So much so, I decided, well, I guess I should go back to school. So I'm back in school. I'm going to Tulane, and I started back in January. But a lot of people ask me, well, what's the next step? They think that this job is just a placeholder. But I'm in no rush to get out of the industry. I love my job. I love my mule. Anyone who sees any of my social media can tell that. And so I love the family I work for, the business I work for. So I'm in no rush to go anywhere, much like a mule.
I see what you did there. And I should
it wasn't set up.
I don't know if I mentioned it at the beginning, but listeners can follow you and Chica on Twitter and Instagram at Jonesy Mule. So it's J-O-N-S-E-Y-M-U-L-E. And we'll put links to that as well as links to find out about tours over in the show notes, which will be beyondbourbonst.com/93. But you mentioned that you've done a lot of research and you've really sort of dug into that. Are there things that have really surprised you about how mules were used in the city? Or things that are particularly interesting to you that you're digging into?
I found a few pretty great little nuggets of information I'm excited about. One of the first things I realized or discovered is that mules were being used in New Orleans by the mid-1700s, which is very surprising. And anyone who's had more than a simple introduction to mules, that they're half horse, half donkey, have often heard that George Washington is not only the father of the country, but the father of the mule, at least American mules. And that's not quite the case, at least here in Louisiana. Our mules are coming from what's now Texas, Spanish domain. So that's been pretty interesting. The Cabildo, or the illustrious Cabildo, actually hired a man bought a mule and a wagon to pick up garbage collection in the 1790s. That's when it begins. And then in the 1950s, their last job in the city is garbage collection. Before
really?
We finally went to dumpster garbage trucks.
Sure.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Right?
So 150-year-old job.
Interesting. And today I think it's probably a little bit easier to get through. It would be easier to get through the French Quarter if there were fewer engines in the fewer cars and trucks.
And that's something that people don't understand as part of this job, is that even though it is an animal-drawn vehicle, it is still a vehicle. Others should see us as a vehicle and not just something that's in the way. So that means if you're driving through the French Quarter, please do us a favor. Stay back one car length. I know we're moving slow. We're probably going to pull over or we're going to turn pretty soon.
And it's not like you should be driving fast in the French Quarter anyway.
Right.
It seems like more and more, particularly around big events, Mardi Gras, French Quarter Fest, the authorities are starting to close more of the quarter off to traffic, vehicular traffic, which makes sense.
Right.
Other than supplying the businesses in the French Quarter, there's no real reason to have vehicles, particularly cars and trucks there. And it just increases the opportunity for mishap, really.
Right. And that's actually, those are the weekends I personally look forward to. Whenever you only see very few cabs, or cabs can go through, but hardly any cars, and it's just carriages and bicycles and pedestrians. And it's nice to see people actually walking around in the street during those events.
Well, then there's so much to enjoy. You know, the street musicians all the time, particularly along Royal Street, the artists along Jackson Square and the backside of the square. There's a lot to experience, and it feels like it's best done at a slower pace,
mm-hmm.
and with fewer distractions. You're not having to worry as much about stepping into the street, right? Those sorts of things. I really appreciate the time. I appreciate you sharing your obvious love for both the mules and for the history, and sharing it through the idea of a carriage ride. So again, we'll put links over in the show notes. But if people are interested, do they book a tour ahead of time, or can they show up at Jackson Square, or both?
You can do both. Only one of the companies really has a up and running kind of reservation system, like TripAdvisor links, but you can always call any of the companies. There are four out: Mid-City Carriages, Royal Carriages, Rolling 20s, and Good Old Days. But really, I recommend people do it the way it's been done for the last 75 years. Just walk on up to Jackson Square. Someone's going to be in a carriage, someone's going to be hawking a ride, and you'll be able to go.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I think it's a neat way to get to meet someone like yourself in the carriage, get a little bit of history, kind of see the French Quarter as you were talking, years ago, my wife and I went to Paris, and we got there, and one of the first things we did was go on the Bateau Mouche, go on a sort of a barge ride down the river there for just a couple miles. It wasn't much, but it was kind of a nice introduction to the city.
Yeah.
And I feel like a carriage ride is kind of the same thing, right? It's not a deep dive, but you're going to get some history. You're kind of going to get into the mood a little bit. You're going to have a good time, and you're going to be right there in the heart of the city. Thank you so much for joining
me
today, Charlotte. We will put the links in the show notes again over at beyondbourbonst.com/93. New episodes are available every other Wednesday. And if you're enjoying the show, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you and me. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.